I'm Pat Morrison here for Larry Mantle. People use telegrams, people use phone calls, people use letters in the past to share themselves, their thoughts, their ideas with someone whom they couldn't reach physically, who wasn't right there. But nowadays, the app generation, as it's being called, can be texting when they're sitting right across from the person that they might in other times be talking directly to. There are stories about this all the time, a crash that occurred, a fatal crash, because a man was tweeting his girlfriend, who was sitting, texting his girlfriend, sitting right there in the car with him. What does the app generation look for in its relationships in this new digital world? The title of the book, The App Generation, How Today's Youth Navigate Identity, Intimacy, and Imagination in a Digital World. Co-author Katie Davis is here to join us to help us navigate the navigation of that. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's great to join you.
And I want to hear from listeners, too, at 866-893-5722, as they see some of this behavior and wonder how it's going to affect their kids, both as children and as they grow up. The idea of intimacy and creativity, all of it figures in the new book. 866-893-5722. So, Katie Davis, I gather you don't want this to be a sort of you kids get off my lawn book. What are you trying to do with it?
Oh, certainly, yes. So my co-author, Howard Gardner, who's a professor at Harvard and was my thesis advisor when I was a doctoral student there, we had been doing a lot of research over the years on the way young people use technology. And we took this opportunity in our book to consolidate and synthesize the research that came out of our 6 years of work together. And while we certainly identify some cautions around technology use, our goal is not to say kids these days, although, you know, there are parts in the book that probably come across that way. But what we're really trying to say is that the technology itself is fairly neutral, although it can be designed a little bit more enabling or dependent, which are the two key terms that we use. But what really counts is how young people and really increasingly all of us choose to use technology. It can be used for good, and it can also be used for bad.
How is it, and I think a lot of people are mystified, that a typed exchange can feel more intimate than a face-to-face conversation?
Yeah, so as the title of our book suggests, we looked at three areas of experience that are particularly salient for young people, and one of those is intimate relationships. And so it's true, there are we heard this over and over from young people, that it often feels a lot easier to share personal feelings with someone when you're not looking at them face-to-face, but rather through a screen. And because, you know, you don't have to look at their reactions, you don't have to look them in the eye, which can often be uncomfortable and for all
but
of us.
But isn't that part of the point? That's how
but
you
sure.
learn to deal with people in relationships.
Absolutely. So that certainly is a cause for concern, because if you, if all of your personal communications take place through a screen, then you aren't making yourself vulnerable. And that's, of course, a very important part of establishing a relationship of trust and intimacy, is showing each other your vulnerability. One interesting finding that we have, and we reported in the book, about the way young people conduct their relationships both online and offline, it has to do with what we're calling fragmented friendships. So often kids will tell us that they're sharing very personal feelings with each other in the evening through text messaging and IMing, and then they get to school the next day and neither conversation partner acknowledges that very personal conversation that happened. So they're almost having these two separate experiences of the same friendship. So it's sort of fragmented in that way. And that, again, is a cause for concern, because, of course, you want your relationships to be integrated across the different contexts that you experience them in.
We're talking about the app generation. It's the title of Katie Davis and Howard Gardner's new book. Maybe the app generation puzzles you, or maybe you're a member of it and think it's terrific and a great improvement on the way relationships and friendships were conducted in years past. 866-893-5722 if you'd like to put some questions to Katie Davis and maybe give her some material for a sequel. 866-893-KPCC. A lot of argument about how the virtual has supplanted the real. Joan is calling from North Hollywood about that. Thank you, Joan.
Yes, thank you. Hello. Yes, just wanted to comment about with this app generation, as you're calling them, there's less experiencing life, experiencing just the moment to moment and the life during the course of a day, as opposed to interacting with a piece of technology. So more kind of interacting with a piece of technology, less actually experiencing it. And through that interacting with a piece of technology, they're going into a virtual world, an illusory world, rather than experiencing the world directly.
What do you think, Joan, are the possible consequences of that?
I think a disconnection. And certainly just as a being, you know, as a being that is in this world and as a spiritual being, I think that definitely it's creating a disconnect with learning who they really are in the reality of existence. Instead of, it's almost like an escapism that is happening and creating a disconnect.
Joan, thank you for that. Katie Davis, I'm sure the young people that you talked to didn't think of it as escapism, but did you conclude that it may be, to use Joan's word, a form of that?
Well, sometimes, and I think one thing that I really picked up on what Joan said was this idea that your experiences are becoming really focused in the virtual and mediated through technology. And it just reminded me of something that we found in our research, where a lot of young people they'll engage in a particular offline experience for the sole purpose.
You mean a real relationship?
Well, they'll go to an event or something.
And that's now called an offline event.
right. Well, I'm just making that distinction because the purpose of having that particular experience, or the primary purpose, is to take pictures of it to then post on Facebook. So it's sort of like even this real-world experience that they're having, they're not fully engaged in it because they're framing it for their online audience.
I've wondered about that, and you see it even in places where, you know, your spouse is giving birth to a child, and all you're doing is taking pictures of it rather than being in the moment with it.
Absolutely. So, and that's a great example. It's certainly this phenomenon is certainly not limited to young people. You see it all the time. You have people taking pictures of their meals and, you know, staging all of their real life events for the camera and for their online perpetuity. And, you know, and that certainly, you know, it's great to be able to share those experiences with a wider audience, but at a certain point, it takes you out of actually really being present for the actual experience.
I was thinking if you go to, say, a football game and come back and somebody says, how was the game? And you say, well, I don't know. My cell phone ran out of juice, so I couldn't get any pictures. Let's hear from more of our listeners, Craig and Torrance. Thanks, Craig. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. My wife and I were at this nice hotel, and out on the veranda there was these two couches facing each other with a little table in between. And on one side were four very attractive young guys, maybe in their 20s. And on the other couch there was four very attractive young women, probably in their 20s. And every one of them was on a phone texting. And I looked at that, and I actually went up to him, and I said, you guys, do you realize that you're sitting here with each other, and you're all texting? And I turned to the young men. I said, if I was your age and I had a beautiful girl like that across from me, I'd be talking to them. I'd be making my moves. I go, what's happening to you guys? And they just kind of looked at me like a deer in headlights. That was it. We just walked away shaking our heads. That's all.
Craig, thank you so much. That must resonate with you, Katie Davis, in your research.
Oh, absolutely, yes. We've seen that, and we've also heard it from young people themselves. And it's funny, many of them are aware and ambivalent about technology. That sometimes surprises people that we talk to about our findings. But when I talk to young people and I ask them to imagine what their life would be like without these technologies, at first they get panicky. You know, this is such a big part of their life now. But then when they think about it, they think, oh, I might have more time to actually spend face-to-face with my friends or to devote to my work or my job or whatever. They do feel a certain pressure to be always connected and tethered to their devices. And it looks at times as if that's their preference, but it isn't always. And I think they are aware of some connections that they are missing out on. So that for those young people, they're certainly, they were busy probably making particular interpersonal connections through their phones, but they were missing out in some potentially very meaningful offline connections.
So there may be at some point a backlash as they become more aware of that.
Oh, absolutely. And my colleague at the University of Washington Information School, Ricardo Gomez, he has recently reported on this idea of pushback and people saying, wait a minute, I've just had too much with technology. And I've heard this from young people, too, and I'm just going to disconnect and just go cold turkey, get rid of Facebook, get rid of Twitter. You know, there are certainly a lot of people out there that are actively reclaiming the balance that they feel is has escaped them.
The book is called The App Generation. Katie Davis is a co-author talking about the app generation, what matters to them, and what kind of relationships the technology forges. In Hollywood, let's hear from Mike. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call. So I obviously grew up, I don't know if that's obvious, but I grew up before the internet, and I remember passing a ton of notes to girlfriends and things like that, and definitely being much more much more personal, revealing thoughts, feelings about them that I would never say in person. You know, 10, 15 notes a day we're passing back and forth, and then come lunchtime, you know, we don't say a word to each other. And so I wonder how much of that is just the natural course when you're 12, 13, 14, you're embarrassed, you're uncomfortable, and how much of it is actually a result of technology? Because certainly...
Okay. Mike, let me put that question to Katie Davis. Of course, I don't think your notes went any farther than the trash. They're not on the World Wide Web. Katie Davis, what about Mike's point?
Well, I think... So that's a really good point, because the motivation for note-taking, for texting, the motivation doesn't come from the technology. The motivation comes from young people and wanting to take that risk and see if that girl responds. And that's part of developing and growing up. But as you say, the notes, they have a very limited audience. If they get into the wrong hands, it may spread to the class or the school, but that's probably going to be the extent of it, whereas the virtual note can extend far beyond the intended audience. And it can also, virtual note-taking or note-passing is all around the clock, you know, and so the technology is not creating these behaviors, but it is enabling an amplification of these behaviors. And that has, you know, we don't yet know exactly what those consequences are.
Let me read a couple of comments from listeners. Marion Burbank says she has a 14-year-old. She had write handwritten thank you notes for birthday gifts, and he flipped. It's important for parents to make sure their kids aren't stuck on a computer. Let's see. We have Kayla, who is a member of the App Generation, calling. Kayla's in Monrovia. Thanks, Kayla.
Hi. So I just wanted to say that a lot of people act as if it's, like, a really bad thing, that, like, I'm not getting a lot of, like, I'm not socialized enough. I'm also homeschooled. But I have now the whole world to choose where I find my friends. I have, like, best friends who live in Australia and Denmark and they're, like, all over the world. And it's really great for me. Like, I'm so close with these people. I really feel like it's not taking me away from being social. It's not ruining my experience. It's giving me a completely new experience.
Kayla, thank you so much for that. Katie Davis, here's Kayla, who's one of the people, I'm sure, in an archetype, at least, you're writing about.
Absolutely, and I appreciate Kayla's call for sure. And I think that what she's mentioned is really a very positive development of the internet, just this opening up and exposure for young people to a whole bunch of different people from different perspectives and walks of life. And that, I think, has really contributed to one of the trends we identified as just a broadening over the years of acceptable identities that are open to today's young people. And that's just from encountering a lot of more different kinds of people online. Mm-hmm. And so I certainly think I think what she says is very valid. The trick, though, and it seems that Kayla is navigating this successfully, is that when you start to have so many people that you're connecting with online, the danger is that your connection to any one person might become diluted. Of course, that that doesn't happen to everyone, but that's something that we did see happening mm-hmm. for a lot of young people.
In Cerritos, Ricardo's on the line to us. Thank you, Ricardo.
Hi. So my nephews and nieces have been asking me for a while to make an app for them. I'm an app developer that would let them send a text message based on a time that they could schedule. And I couldn't understand why they would want something like that, but they insisted for a long time that I develop an app like that.
Oh, I think I can understand right away. You want to send it when they're asleep.
Exactly. Yeah. The biggest reason I heard was that they were afraid that they would forget to send a text message at a particular time. So if they were having a really great night, they wanted to remember to text their boyfriend, "I had a great time. I love you," 6 a.m. the next day.
Oh, so they enjoyed the real experience, not just the virtual one.
Yeah, and it just seemed kind of interesting that they would want something like that. So.
It sounds like the world might want something like that, Ricardo. We'll be looking for it. Thank you so much. Katie Davis, here you have kids who want the real experience and the virtual experience, too, and they want control over the virtual experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's an awesome idea for an app. I would love it. One thing that we really encourage in the book, where we are educators, and in the end of the book, we focus on the educational implications of educating the app generation. And a key distinction that we make is this distinction between being app-enabled versus app-dependent. So app-dependent, you are very tied to the technology,
right.
And you let your life pretty much be dictated by whatever apps you have at hand.
Katie Davis, thank you so much. The co-author of The App Generation, How Today's Youth Navigate Identity, Intimacy, and Imagination in a Digital World. You can find out more about it on kpcc.org for AirTalk. I'm Pat Morrison here today on AirTalk for Larry Mantle and speaking to you from the Moen Broadcast Center.